Late Night Live. Ideas and opinions from around the world.
Good on you, Horace. You can go home now. Get your taxi docket from the front desk. This is Late Night Live, brought to you by the letter R. Do you remember Sesame Street? Would be brought to you by alphabetical things, wasn't it? Presented, I think, almost sponsored by the letter A or something. Well, this week it's been R. I was harking back to the good old days of the Howard years when the R's that we worried about were principally refugees, reconciliation and the Republic. At the moment, the R's are more tend to emphasise more the economic meltdown, the recession. But as of tonight, the Republic's back on the burner. Well, it's not. It's on the back burner. Michelle Grattan rang me to alert me to this fact that apparently Kev's not going to push ahead with the Republic. And this announcement coincided with Her Majesty's 83rd birthday. What a lovely present to give the dear old thing. Tonight we are going to be looking, however, at refugees. I'll be talking to Ofat Mahmood in a minute, who's a remarkable woman, whom we've often spoken to over the years because of her valiant work in the camps of the Lebanon, the Palestinian camps in the Lebanon. Often I've talked to her while the bullets have been whizzing around. Then we're going to look at natural disasters. Now cop this, if I can find the note I wrote down here. Since 1970... almost 5 billion people have been hit by what we call natural disasters. Over 2 million people have lost their lives. And that's a greater impact on humans than all the wars that have been going on around the world in the same time frame. And we'd be whizzing off to Oslo to talk to a fellow who's written a book called The End Is Nigh, a history of natural disasters, Henrik Svensson. Pretty interesting book. And then, at the end of the programme, or towards the end of the programme, I'm going to talk to a British actor, who plays a man playing an ape who portrays a man. And if that sounds Kafkaesque, it bloody well should, because it all derives from a wonderful short story of the talented Franz Kafka. But first of all... as I said, Ofat Mahmood, director of the Women's Humanitarian Organisation in Lebanon. She's just been here, a visit hosted by Union Aid Abroad as a part of an ongoing effort to get the international community to at least take notice of the plight of the hundreds of thousands of forgotten refugees in the camps. And her visit, of course, coincided with our front page stories here about capital R refugees. Ofat came into the studio just a little while ago, on her way to the airport for the long flight home, if you can call a refugee camp home. Well, she certainly has for almost her entire life. And I asked her what she made of our debate about a few sad, bedraggled refugee boats arriving off northern Australia.
Of course, I've heard the story. Our story is a little bit different. We have been refugees for 61 years. And when I hear the story of those refugees who were trying to come to Australia, I thought, oh, refugee is a very hard word, actually. It's a painful experience to be a refugee. And I think poor people, they believe in, like, they will have better life, they will have safe trip. This is the way they promise them, those who deal with the smuggles. And the problem is not those poor people. They are after good life, actually. We should, like, government should be after those who are involved in the smuggles, like taking money out of these people, letting them sell everything and then put them in boats. Even they don't know where they are going.
Does it surprise you how little compassion is expressed towards the refugees?
It does,
actually. Or with your experience? Is that what you
actually
expect?
Yes, I have long experience. Before I was born, I was born as a refugee. 61 years we have been refugees. And yes, actually, as I said, it's very painful experience. You exist and you don't exist. You are not counted. You have no rights. So,
but refugees, of course, do have rights, and I think that Australia should take responsibility.
Yes, but
for
I'm
the
talking
refugees
about,
that arrive.
Yeah, I'm talking about Palestinian refugees. We have absolutely no rights, very limited rights. We have, for example, in Lebanon, still we have no right to work. We have no right to any to nationality, and we don't want this. We want to be Palestinians and stay Palestinians. But of course, countries should take the responsibility of refugees. When you accept refugees, take responsibility of refugees.
Are you aware of any refugees from the Lebanese camps seeking to make the perilous journey to Australia?
Some, yes. They wanted to have, life very, very difficult, no work. They are not really having fun in their life. So they wanted to run away, Australia or other countries. But the problem now, my people, they are aware that these smugglers are just making money, so they started not to believe in them, thank God, at the end.
I would remind the listener of the most famous or infamous Palestinian refugee of recent times, Aladdin Sisalem, who's held on Manus Island off PNG under the so-called Pacific Solution for 18 months. He was the last one left, and the Howard government paid about $4 million to keep him there by himself before he was finally released. How did the people in camps afford to pay people smugglers? This is sort of an attitude that half the refugees must be incredibly affluent.
Exactly. First of all, people don't have enough. So, and the house they own, it's not they don't own it, actually. The house is owned by the United Nations, rented this land from the Lebanese government. But somehow they own the walls and the furniture in the house. So they sell this. They also, if they have relatives abroad, they beg them to send them money. So they do whatever they can to be able to travel, to migrate. And at the end, they make half the trip and they send back.
So, of course, a lot of them arrive back home after some time.
With nothing.
Even poorer.
Exactly. I'll tell you one family tried to migrate to Sweden. And they ended up in Sri Lanka. So, and they came back. They were in prison for a period, and they came back nothing. They had no house. They had no money. They had nothing. Even the family who lives abroad who support them, they gave them all the money they could. So they were even not able to support them later.
And the last time you and I talked was at the time one of the big camps in Lebanon was under siege from extremists on the inside and tanks on the outside. What happened to the extremists and to the residents of that camp?
Unfortunately, this camp still not rebuilt. It's 2 years now. Just small population of the camp were able to return for small, in a small area. The rest of the camp is still destroyed. The extremists disappeared.
Without trace, I understand.
Yes, they disappeared. They were in the camp. And on the last day of the war, they did not find them. The leader of that extremist and the group with them from the first line disappeared.
So how many of those who fled the destroyed camps came to the camp where you work?
Until now, they are not settled. They are not settled. They keep coming and going. During the fighting, they left the whole area and they spread all over the places in all camps. We have 12 camps in Lebanon. So in the camp where I come from, Burj al Barajni, which already it's 1 square kilometer population, over 22,000.
I'm going to repeat that so the listener can think about it. Okay. 22,000 people living in an area of 1 square kilometer.
And we had to receive displaced refugees from Nahr al-Barid camp, this camp. So we had about 325 families, and you can multiply that by 7.
You and I once talked about the possibility of Palestinian refugees getting the right to work, that the Lebanese government was talking about this, but you point out that that didn't happen.
Didn't happen. It was just talks, yeah.
So what sort of economy is there within the camp?
Within the Palestinian workforce, inside the camps, people have small shops, and it's not enough for their daily bread even. We have the United Nations agency, which is called UNRWA. They provide some work opportunities in education and health department, NGO sector. So within the Palestinian workforce, plus actually, frankly, our main income It's from relatives abroad.
This is, might sound an odd question, but do camp residents have the right to vote in either Palestinian or Lebanese elections?
No, not at all. We never have this right. We don't vote for the Lebanese government because we are only refugees in Lebanon, and that means we have no access to the government. Also, we don't vote for the Palestinian Authority. And this is a very, very, I think, dangerous issue because they will negotiate our problem in the future. So yeah. We need to give them our... We need to have sound on there.
In other words, you're just pawns if you don't have the right to vote.
Yeah.
Tell me about the shanty towns known as gatherings.
Yes. Oh, this is after 1948, when the UN created this agency, which called UNRWA. They, of course, host Palestinians in areas which they rented from the Lebanese government, and they registered them as refugee camps, Palestinians refugees camps. But, of course, the population is increasing. Some camps destroyed, like Nabatiya camp in the south of Lebanon, and Tal Zaatar camp and others. So people have no place to go. So they went and they lived close to other camps, but it's not registered.
I find it fascinating that people who live in these oppressed, overcrowded, impossible places, the official camps, rarely leave them. Even if they can, they don't. They're sort of defeated by everything. They just stay there.
First of all, long years of civil war. You feel you are not welcomed in Lebanon. Makes you feel, and also your economy is very bad. Where to go? Why to go? So people really are isolated in the camps. Also, recently, 2001, there was a new regulation in Lebanon, and this makes our life insecure in Lebanon. We never know when we will have new regulations. Palestinians have no right to own any property in Lebanon. So even those who could make it and they could have money, they now can't own flat in Lebanon.
It's the worst sort of a parallel universe in a way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, you're very welcome here, Ofat Mahmoud. It's good to see you, having talked to you so often. And Ofat is the director of the Women's Humanitarian Organization in Lebanon. This is a little wireless program called LNL on Radio National. That's abc.net.au/rn.